Welcome to the Senya Happy Hour, where you get 1 hour of learning in less than 30 minutes.
You know, back in late January, when we got the news that our annual Senya conference was canceled, as a board, we were devastated. After all, we love this conference for just so many reasons. Most of all, we love getting to see all of our friends and network every single year. And the planning committee at International School Manila, they had worked so hard to bring all of us such a memorable experience, and yet it was simply pulled out from under them. And now, here we are, in this temporary reality we call COVID. So much has changed for all of us as educators, professionals, and parents of children with additional needs, and our way of educating them was forced to change too. Zoom, Seesaw, Google Classroom, EduPuzzle, Screencastify. Most of us hadn't heard these words before a few weeks ago, and within days, we had become experts. Many of us are at the beginning stages of virtual teaching. Others, like our guest today, have been at it for quite a while now. Today, Carl, Katie, and I discuss where we are in our journeys and what we are doing to support our students with special education needs. Carl and Katie have been doing this since the early days, as they live in China and Hong Kong, respectively. So I was able to pick up some tips and excellent advice from them. The most important being, we are doing enough. And be kind to yourself. Senya friends, be kind to yourselves during this uncertain time. Take care of you, your family, and maybe try to just learn one thing a day. You are all awesome. And now, our show.
Okay, so hi everyone. My name is Carl Mejia. I am the high school learning support teacher at BCIS, that's Beijing City International School. So I mainly work with grades 9 to 12, and right now I am at Manila, my hometown, doing online teaching.
Thanks. Hi, welcome.
My name is Katie Steers. I've been an educator for approaching 20 years, and I was born in taught in UK for quite some time, but I've been in Hong Kong for the last 8 years. I teach at Sha Tin Junior School, which is one of the English Schools Foundations. So there's a number of primary schools under that umbrella. And currently I'm teaching grade 2. I'm the class teacher and learning support class teacher for that particular grade level. But I've taught across primary age in the length of time I've been teaching.
Great. Well, and I'm Lori Bull, and I teach at International School Bangkok with the severe needs population at our school. So I teach kids with Down syndrome, severe autism, and intellectual disabilities. So I'll be sharing my thoughts on this whole experience as well. So Katie and Carl, can you start off by thinking back to that first day that your school or your country said, okay, no more school? Probably for 2 weeks. What was going through your mind at that time? What were you thinking about?
In Hong Kong, the schools had actually been shut earlier in the academic year. We'd had the protests and the schools had to be shut during that instance. So my first thought was, okay, this is like, it's a similar situation. The schools are going to be shut and we can maybe use some of the things that we've had in place. We had in mind that it would be for a shorter time than it initially is. Turned out to be. So we had some things in place, and obviously it wasn't a brilliant feeling, but it was something that was like, okay, this is slightly known territory. And we'd had feedback from parents, so we met as a staff and we discussed some adaptations that we were going to make going forwards based on what our previous experience had been of having the school shut. But obviously it snowballed into something much bigger than that. I've only actually taught my class for this year in January for 2.5 weeks, and then Chinese New Year came, and it was during Chinese New Year that towards the end of that week that we had the call that schools would be shut. So that was the initial story, and then 8 weeks in, we're still continuing to do home learning.
Wow. How about you, Carl?
For me, I was actually in Chinese New Year break. I was in Italy at that time. So you know how small the international school community is. So I was with two other co-teachers. So we were starting to like get messages like from like informal chats, like with this coronavirus like spiking up, that there might be a shutdown. So we were like really just trying to enjoy the vacation at the same time, while at the same time trying to process. So like, do we go back to Beijing? Do we go in our hometowns now? Like, what do we do? And I think for me, the main thought that I had there was like, how was I going to like continue to be productive considering that I wasn't a main classroom teacher? Like, how will this online learning work for me as a support teacher? How can I further support students even though I'm not there? Because as a learning support teacher in high school, like the face-to-face contact for me was a big thing. Like, I can talk and communicate and collaborate better with students and teachers like that. So when we heard about this, that was the initial thought, like, how can I make this work? It was very uncertain, but yeah, we just kind of like took it day per day until, like Katie said, we're at week 8 now and there's no turning back. Yeah,
you know, I think all educators probably panic a bit when they hear of this happening. But those of us in special education, I think it might hit us a little harder because that's our fear. How do we support our most vulnerable learners and give them what they need when we can't meet with them in that face-to-face setting?
Yeah, I should say that I work with a team of teachers. So I'm like the main class teacher, but I also have an additional education assistant as well as a support teacher and another assistant. So there's actually four adults that support the students in my class. So I'm representing the team collective today.
Yeah, and then same for me. There's a total of 9 in my department. So it's a combined learning support and EAL team. For the whole high school, there's like 3 teachers and we have 6 lovely teaching assistants, which we consider teachers as well. So yeah, I'm also representing the collective effort and collaboration of all the team members today. Shout out to everyone.
That's great. Yeah, we're quite fortunate that we have large teams at our school of learning support teachers and EAL teachers. I know that all of the ones at ISB as well have just been on fire making it work for our kids. So it's been a positive thing to watch from the sidelines, you know, as we're all isolated in our own homes, just kind of watching what everyone's able to do in such a short amount of time. For us, it happened on a Friday and they said, so Monday you'll be doing online teaching. And it was new to all of us. So we had really no idea what to do. And so keeping that in mind, I know our school reached out to schools such as yours who have been through it for 8 weeks to learn like the types of apps, the types of platforms. What are you guys using?
There's a few different apps that we're using. So we're doing live video conferencing or live teaching with the students every day. And initially we're using Google Meet. And that had quite a few advantages because it was quite simple for the students to use. But recently, in the last few weeks, we've moved over to Zoom because there's actually more features within that to make the teaching more interactive. And so that's in terms of the live conversations with the students. In terms of like how we're actually preparing and sharing the learning to the students, then we're creating like a Google slide. I work in a team of 5 teachers, so we collaborate on that slide together, and then we share it out to the students via the parents' email because the year 2 students haven't actually got access to email. But we also put it on Google Classroom so they can access it independently if they wish to. And a lot of the content has been us creating mini videos like tutorial videos or instructional videos, and I use Screencastify a lot for that, and as I know a lot of other educators are, and so obviously that's a great one to be using. The students were very familiar with using Seesaw and Flipgrid, so I've tried to stick in terms of the students using apps that they were familiar with already, because I didn't want them to be in an different situation and then trying to master new technology, although they've never used Zoom before and they have actually taken that in their stride with support from parents. So Seesaw and Flipgrid are some that I've been using with them. In addition, like a whole multitude of other apps that the students we've used with the students, for example, resource-based, like using Epic Books or Oxford Owl Books, Phonics Hero, and also IXL, just to name a few. So there's the ones that we're using as a teacher, like with video conferencing, then there's the ones that we're using to prepare lessons, and then there's the ones that we're using with the students. So quite a range.
And how long did it take you to learn all that, Katie?
I'm very fortunate that prior to being a class teacher, I was a specialist teacher. I was the information literacy teacher, which focused on digital literacies. So I'm actually most vast majority I'd used previously, and it's been really nice to actually to be able to support my colleagues and my and the school people around me and sharing like my expertise and some of them that I have used previously. So I know there's been a full spectrum within my school in terms of people with confidence with using learning technologies, and I'm very sensitive to the fact that other people might not have used them, and I try and certainly help out with people as much as possible. But in my own situation, it was something that I was reasonably confident with already.
Yeah, well, for us at BCIS, oh, sorry, was Katie. Okay, her screen full. So for us, we also use like a variety of like websites and platforms. Like we have Teams, OneNote, ManageBack for the daily things, Seesaw. But it kind of like proved to be a bit overwhelming for the students, because at high school, like usually the teach our main one is ManageBack, definitely, where we put like the assignments, the summatives. But the students got overwhelmed, I think, and even the teachers with all the different like platforms of where to look at. So after, I think, the first or second week, the administrators of our school like had they released a guideline that says that email and ManageBack are going to be the main ones. So every morning, the students should only check those two to see what tasks they need to do. But then it's the teacher's decision now, like if they want to like branch out to Seesaw, if they want to branch out to OneNote or something else. But with all those platforms there, like we had the admins like decided to choose two that the students and parents and teachers can all have as a central point. But yeah, like same with Katie, we also use Zoom a lot. Yeah, sadly, Google doesn't work for China, and we had some like VPN connectivity issues with different apps. So even Seesaw, sometimes it doesn't work because the internet doesn't have VPN for some students. So you're kind of like using ManageBack and email as the starting point and then branch off to different ones.
Yeah, we're still so new at it that I'm still not clear exactly everything we're using. But we have been using Seesaw and Zoom quite a bit in the elementary division. And I'm starting to learn Screencastify as well. And unlike Katie, most of this is new to me. I did have Seesaw set up for my classroom, but I wasn't taking advantage of all the really amazing things it has to offer. So you can create great activities for the kids to do that correlate with the goals and objectives on their IEP. So I'm really enjoying learning it. But everything is just such a steep learning curve for those of us maybe over 40, maybe. So anyway, I am interested, Carl, you mentioned how your students, you mentioned that the admin was saying that the students were becoming a bit overwhelmed. And I think about our students with executive functioning issues. And those are the ones I worry about so much. I just think, how can they possibly be keeping this all together, organizing their day, self-managing, organizing, prioritizing? Do you have any tips on how to help your older students?
Yes. Well, for them, I kind of like took the fact that they are glued to their phone most of the time. So initially, what I try to do is like I set up a Zoom chat with them, and then as I talk with them face to face, that's where we create a list of like strategies that we will try. The one that I really like the most is like having their phone like set timers for everything. Because if you have an iPhone, you just say, "Hey Siri, can you remind me every day 9 a.m. to check my email?" Once it's set, every morning there's no doubt that it will pop up out of their phone, and like it just helps them like to remember to check this website, and then from there on they remember to check this one for math, this one for that. So I really like just using the ones that they have right now, because teenagers, especially seniors, they really like looking at their phone. So besides that, I also like input like you know how you can send calendar invites on the Outlook app, because we use Outlook. So I just kind of like send meetings with them, but it's not actually a meeting. I just want it to pop out of their screen. So if they get distracted somewhere, there will be a pop-up in 15 minutes. Mr. Carl wants you to check math. So things like that is something that I really like to give as a tip, because teenagers have are glued to their technology most of these days.
That's brilliant. So to clarify, do you Zoom with your students each day?
No, I don't Zoom with them each day. I try at least once a week, but it seems that I've only like have like successful Zoom meetings with them at least once every 2 weeks. And not all on my learning support register. I had Zoom calls with everyone, not every one of them. So I've started with a few of them, and some of them just like replying and end up not having a Zoom chat. So, but those who like tell me that they want to chat with me, I do have a Zoom chat with them.
That's great. Katie, how are you dealing with your students that might have trouble organizing themselves?
So for the students, yeah, I think definitely it's a partnership because the students are younger, like they're 6 and 7 year olds in the age group that I'm with, then we're trying to, there is an adult at home with them, be it the parent or be it assistant at home, like somebody is there with them. So although we want the students to be independent, we also appreciate the fact that there needs to be someone often to help them physically log on to a device and access the learning. So it's a partnership in reaching out and the balance between encouraging them to be independent but also putting supports in place for them. So obviously that whoever is the adult at home with them is very much appreciated in that role. As the main class teacher, then every day I'll meet with the students. So like 9 o'clock every morning we have a check-in, and I'll literally speak through the home learning slides and direct them to anything that is like a priority learning activity. I also meet with them in Zoom like throughout the week for other occasions, like we do group reading together, or we do like a focused like language or math activity. In addition to that, the other adults, so for example, another teacher works with the students who need that additional support, and she'll go through them one-to-one on the like priority activities, go through the home learning. So she's echoing, consolidating on the things that I've covered, and ensuring that children like really understand it and maybe even do it live within the time, okay, like just talk them through it a little bit more. So just put them more scaffolds in place, I suppose, to ensure and support them with that. I think that we're constantly at the sort of consideration of use of screen time as well, because it is all online, and we don't want the students to spend their whole life looking at a screen, just like we don't want our life looking at a screen. But as an adult, we can manage it in maybe in a different way to what the students can. And I think trying to put things out there that like it might involve some kind of instructional video or conversation initially, but then encouraging them to move away from their screen and do something different as well. We often put in like brain breaks or other little activities that are not necessarily academic focused, like do something creative or even just stand up and stretch, take a breath. Like I think that that support's needed and support and important as well. Yeah,
I catch myself wondering quite a bit, what is the long-term effect going to be on our students from this amount of time that they are spending on their screens? So I think it's great that teachers are trying to help manage that, but it's hard. It's a hard balance because even anytime they want to check their schedule, it's online, right? It's on Seesaw or somewhere. So,
yeah, I just want to add to that, like, yeah, very good point with the screen time. That actually, that at BCIS we've had already 2 screen-free days. I think everyone also noticed that, like, there's too much screen time, and then we asked them to like take breaks. But yeah, we just finished our 2nd screen-free day like last week. It's the 2nd out of all the weeks. So it's a day where it's not necessarily a non-learning day, but like the teachers assign a task that doesn't require the students to look at their laptops the whole day. So yeah, that's another thing that we've done, like, to also reduce that one. Yeah, it's really, I think, yeah, you made a really good point, Katie, with that. What's the long-term effect? Or Laurie? Yeah,
that's a great idea, though. I think I'm going to suggest that screen-free day to our school and hope it takes off.
Yeah, so we've tried to, in our school, we're mindful of that on a Friday. We call it Feel Good Friday. So we have more of a focus on like creative and arts, positive activities, still some academic focus within that, but just a bit of a change to pace. And I think for everybody, like as you get onto Friday, it's like, okay, let's, the weekend's in sight, we're going to do our home learning, but maybe just in a slightly different way. Like I've used Flipgrid, and I've put the, like a, I do a little dance myself, like to a go noodle, and then I get the class just to post back with their go noodle dances or something like that. Thinking this Friday, I'm wondering if I might do a class band. Like a few of the students, one of the positivity activities, so this is like an optional free choice grid, was make your own musical instrument, and three of the children have demonstrated to me that they've made assorted instruments. So I think I might put it out to them on Friday that we just bring your own instrument, like whatever they've made at home, and we're just like in for our mornings Zoom, we might just all turn our mics on and, you know,
that'd be so fun.
Oh, cool.
Make sure you share it.
Light the moment. Yeah.
That's so cool. So in my case, what I'm doing with my students is setting up a Zoom meeting each day with every student. I only have 8, and we share them in a classroom. So I work one-on-one with 5 of the students. What I'm finding is it's going very well as long as there's an adult right there with them, and we're kind of doing the learning together. My concern for me is just the sustainability of it all. I know that besides the intense teaching of it all, then it's the planning, and then the giving the feedback on the seesaw lessons that you provide. It's just all of it combined. And I'm finding that I'm waking up at 6 a.m, I'm on the computer. I go to bed at 10 and I'm just closing the computer. I'm waking up in the morning, my eyes are stuck together because I've been staring at the computer for so long. So I'm asking you who have had this experience of 8 weeks now, does it get better? Is it more sustainable in the future? Is this sustainable?
I think we have to make it sustainable because we don't know how long it's going to be occurring. So we have to make adjustments. What I'm doing now isn't what I did when I first started. Like when I first started, I diligently responded in detail to every student's Flipgrid seesaw, and like in comments I would like write like a few sentences, give them like feedback, feed forward, like really detailed response. But like since we've got like maybe I have like 100 posts a day to look at, and now the shift has been that, okay, what is the priority activity? So each day they have one focus, be it math, language, one focus for the day, and that is the focus that I'm going to give more time on, detailed feedback and feedback feed forward. But the other ones, like I will acknowledge, I will like them, and I might do like a brief comment, but it's like it has to be sustainable for me as well, because I'm obviously responding to students' learning is incredibly important, and I'm doing that within Seesaw, but in the live sessions I'm also giving them feedback in that in addition to obviously preparing all the lessons and everything else. So it just, and sometimes I'm the type of teacher that's hard to let things go, like it tick tick ticks in my brain, and like I found it difficult to shut down my computer, so like I haven't got it perfectly. And I have to say, like, I never realized what it'd be like working from home. I really didn't. I thought like, okay, take my school day but put it at home, but it's entirely different to that. I do work longer hours, and I'm trying to continually be mindful of that and try and take breaks. It's a work in progress even in 8 weeks, so I think if anyone's got it cracked, then yeah, let me know.
Yeah, I just want to agree with you both. Like it does feel like a lot. Like when I was at the second or third week, I was like chatting with some of my colleagues, and we were saying like, you know what, for being at home and like at the comfort of your bedroom, it feels a lot more challenging, like than physically going up, going to your work. Like it feels more tiring, even though you can basically work sitting down with your laptop. So it is a lot of work, because some of the things that we usually do, we can do it at school, just like verbally or just by seeing them. But now everything's here. But to answer your question, like how sustainable can this be? I would say, like for me, I think it can be sustainable, especially if it's a team effort. Like for example, the setup for me, since I'm at high school, I have like 2 teaching assistants with me and an EAL teacher as well. So we actually have group meetings like every week just to discuss our list of students, because I don't get to teach them like one-on-one, like per subject. Like we're kind of like around supporting different teachers as well. So we actually opened an online spreadsheet just to make note, like how's this student in math? How's this student in science? And then we sit down once every week and just take a look at the students, so we can like see a collective view of how the student is doing.
And I'd just like to add as well, this, like I was talking about me personally, I just find it difficult to move away from the screen. I think in terms of the systems we've got in school, we've got some great systems in school. And I'd like to echo what Carl's saying, like working in a collaborative team. I work in a team of five, and having the shared responsibilities throughout the team, like we can manage it and make it work. It's just for someone who isn't used to working at home, it's quite difficult, and especially with family at home as well.
Yeah, totally agree. Like at this moment, I'm still not used to it. But like you mentioned, Katie, earlier, we need to make it work. And I think, like, to be honest, it's getting a bit better. Like it's still overwhelming and it's still tiresome, but you kind of get the hang of it now that we're in week 8, which is another funny thing, another teacher chatted in my group the other day, like when we go back, it's going to be another adjustment, like going back to the regular. We're kind of getting used to online teaching now, that when school resumes physically, that might be another adjustment for us. That's just a funny thing.
Yeah, and I think as well, like the routine is there now. I get up in the morning, I check my emails. 9 o'clock, I speak to the children, like the daily check-in. 9:30, I have a guided reading group. Then I'll like do some lesson preparation or feedback in Seesaw. Depending on which day it is, I'll also have like a language or math session. And then every day, like, or most days, I'm meeting with my team, or so year group team, to discuss like planning and share ideas. And so things are falling into place, but I think it's so different to what we knew as teachers up until this point, that even though like that we can adjust to it, it still feels strange. And I think that's probably not going to go away.
So I think I hear you saying that if you could go back and tell your first day selves, you would say create a routine and work with your team. Any other suggestions?
Like in terms of like being sustainable, right?
Yeah, giving some pointers to yourself on that first day.
Oh, yeah, I would just like stay consistent, like like the routine, like you said, like just stick to it. Like for me, even if some students don't reply to me reaching out to them, I make sure like it's consistent. I make sure that the counselors know if I'm reaching out to them, because what happens also for the high school level, sometimes teachers are reaching out from different platforms or like without other teachers knowing. So once you have that system of collaboration of then like coordinating with everyone, at least all of you know what's happening with a student. Not just like, oh, he's not responding to me, he's not working in this specific subject, and for other teachers he's actually working. So it's good to have like that overview on some students with special needs, learning needs. I mean,
also to add as well, like to know that it's okay, and actually in fact you'll be a more effective teacher if you can like protect and make sure that you're getting your own work-life balance. Like for example, like 5 o'clock, I would say like to myself, okay, that's me done for the day in terms of like responding to students or responding to parents' emails. Like, because if I was at school, I wouldn't necessarily respond to things out of hours. But I think because everything's online, I feel like you could have more pressure to respond. But I'd say like, okay, 5 o'clock, that's the cutoff. And then the next morning I'll get back to the parents. Yeah.
Oh, just to add, I like the thing that you mentioned about the response time. So that's another tip that I would have, like if any like other teachers are listening. Like I mentioned earlier that our administrators released a guideline. So because if there's no guideline, I think some teachers will have different expectations, like what happens if a student doesn't respond? What happens? How much time do I get to respond to this? So when our admins released that guidelines, it had everything there, like how many we have a 48-hour window for replying to email. So we're not pressured to like reply to everything if your inbox is like exploding already. And we have like a protocol now, who do we contact if a student doesn't submit something or if my student is not reaching out. So I think having those guidelines from your administrators would really help not only us learning support teachers, but all the subject teachers, so we know what to follow. What if this happens? We have a guideline for that.
Yeah, and continuing on with that, we have something very similar. Like the 5 o'clock cutoff is recommended from the school. Like that's been put together in a protocol. Also, yeah, we have systems in place. Like if a student hasn't responded to anything in the course of a week, then we have something in place that somebody will follow up with a phone call, direct phone call, because just the same as if a student was attending in school, like we just want to know that everyone's okay. So we just want to follow up and like, yeah, is there a reason that they didn't respond? Or it's not necessarily always about the completing of the home learning, but it's just checking on the safety and well-being of all the students as well.
Yeah.
And what about the assessment piece? Especially, Carl, I'm guessing you have some IEPs and goals and objectives that you need to be taking that data for. How are you doing that? Or has your school thought about that yet? Where are you at with that?
Well, for assessment, like I only have a few like main IEPs that I'm working with right now, because at our school, for the levels that I support, I only have maybe less than 10 who are like diagnosed with learning needs. So for their goals, I just try to check in with them. I send every week a check-in email with them. I'm not necessarily assessing them yet based on that, but I just kind of gauge like how they are keeping up. Like our goal was like this math plan. How do we keep up with that? And then I specifically Zoom call with specific students to focus on that. So I have one student now that he is in a grade 12 math IB class. We made a new calendar. I coordinated with the teacher with that, set up a new system for him because he is struggling to catch up the same pace as the others, especially now that it's online. So we made a different schedule for him. I set Khan Academy links for him with deadlines, so things like that. So it starts off with that weekly check-in at Monday, and then I just branch off to which specific students I need to catch up on in terms of their specific goals. But in terms of noting them down, it hasn't been 100% like the same in school that I can note down everything, but I'm keeping all tabs here. Yeah.
And I think thinking about some of the students in my class, the IEP targets, many of them were around social and communication. So they would have been doing things within a group situation and social thinking and group games. And you can try to reproduce that in a video chat, but it's not in the same way. So you can only do what you can do with considering the technology you have available to you and obviously the adults that you have in supporting. So in some ways, adjustments have had to be made in consideration of where we are with the virtual learning.
Just to add on to that, because the student profiles that we release for all the students, it has the accommodations and then the modifications if they need them. So what our head of department actually did, I think it was around the first few weeks of the online learning, we sent a general message to all teachers to refer to the profiles that we sent, just to remember which student needs accommodations, which students need extra time for completing work. So a simple reminder like that is also something that we did, because unlike when we were physically at school, we're there to remind the teachers and the students that they have these accommodations in place. But now that it's online all, like Katie said, we have a boundary of what we can try to do as much here. So just keeping that communication open to all teachers, reminding them which students need more help, and then coordinating that is a big help as well.
Katie, as a classroom teacher, how are you differentiating or supporting your learners? You mentioned the kids are getting their social skills or not getting their social skills as much as you possibly could in a typical classroom setting. But what about academic work?
In terms of the academic, then my class, we were using something called Solo Taxonomy, which is structured observation of learning outcomes. So basically the students were already familiar with, it's a way of them self-differentiating or self-assessing what their level of learning is. Structured outcome learning objectives. So basically when I'm preparing a lesson for them now, I'm using a framework that they're familiar with. So I'm not sure how it would be. It's not to say you couldn't do it if you hadn't previously done it, but I think it does help that the students were familiar with it. So basically, if I'm preparing a lesson, for example, I prepared a lesson for the students recently about 2D shapes, and then I'll give them three levels in which they can complete the learning. So one group might just focus on squares, circles, triangles. The next group might focus on a bigger range of shapes. And then the last group might be making generalizations and sorting them using a Venn diagram. So the students are quite familiar with actually self-assessing what level they're at. So that has helped in terms of them, for the most part, completing activities which are within their level of learning, so to speak. Also, I think differentiated support from the adults. So for the sort of majority of my class, the mainstream part of the class, then they are joining the daily talks with me. But in addition, there are other adults supporting. So we've got some children have more frequent one-to-one reading or additional support for their maths. If they're not, if they haven't got the foundational math skills, then they've got an adult who's supporting them with that, and also an adult supporting them with time management and just, you know, focus, I suppose, because some of the students find it quite difficult to keep focus and keep concentration. So actually, if there's another adult alongside them and just sort of prompting and supporting them in some of the focused learning, I think that's helpful as well.
And are you doing that in the breakout rooms in Zoom or in an
cases we're doing it mostly in Zoom for the live sessions, and then on the home learning, the slides have like the three different areas of the three solar taxonomy, the three different activities for them to complete, and that's for like maths, phonics, language. We're using it across a variety of curriculum areas so that it's always the same consistent format. Very, very appreciative of the parents or adults who are supporting at home as well. We do encourage the children to be as independent as possible, but even a case of like, I don't know, the students now, if they don't have a printer, maybe the parents are printing out things for them. We always say like, you don't have to use a printer, you can write things out by hand, but some parents like to print things out as well. So I think it's differentiation in terms of like level of support from the adults. Those that need more support are getting more support, hopefully, and also in terms of their own self-differentiation. Obviously, some students do struggle with that, so we might need to just prompt them a little bit. Okay, maybe that activity was just too easy or too hard, so maybe next time try a different activity. Yeah.
And Katie, I found you on Twitter. You posted an amazing lesson, and so I started following all your posts, and you told us how you made one of your lessons. So can you just maybe briefly go through that process?
Yes. So I think the slide you're referring to was the phonics lessons, which I did. So these were taken out of the daily slides, which the students receive. So for example, we were focused on the sound, ER spelling, IR, UR, the different ways to make the sound. And what I'd done was I made instructional videos of myself. So first of all, I created a set of Google slides, and then I use Screencastify to talk over the top. So the students are visually seeing it on the screen, but also they're seeing me in the corner, like modeling it, because I think particularly with phonics and spoken language, like if they can see and hear us, just from the personal connection with their teacher or an adult from they know from their school, and B, in terms of like the modeling. So just creating those instructional videos, I feel, is very important. And then the examples were also using solar taxonomy. So they were using, there were differentiated activities based on where they were in terms of their phonics. Yeah.
And speaking of Twitter, I know you're on Twitter. Are you on Twitter, Carl?
There, sorry. So yeah, I used to have a Twitter account before, but I haven't been using one because, you know, with the issues of VPN as well on social media in China. So yeah, I do have a personal one, but I haven't been using it. But I do follow some professionals in the field.
Yeah, who do you like to follow?
Yeah, it's not necessarily related to high school, but do you guys follow Pernil Rip?
Yes, she's great.
She's my favorite because when I saw her at Ear Coast, I think it was in Bangkok a few years ago, she was just so passionate. So even though I was a high school learning support teacher, I attended her session, I think, on reading. I think that's where she specializes in. And just her passion and just those simple ideas like of making things more relevant and accessible to students, that really like connected to me, and that just really inspired me to like try more things with high school students. Like it can be fun for older students as well. So I like to follow her.
Yeah, me too. How about you, Katie? Who do you like to follow?
I have a very eclectic mix of people that I follow, because I will follow like, I love to learn from everybody and anything, to be honest. So that might just be a variety of class teachers who might be working at my grade level, or a variety of other grade levels, those that are working in mainstream, those that work in special needs. I like to listen to podcasts. So one of my particular favourite ones is Education Bookcast. It's he also has a Twitter account. It's a man called Stanislaw Porosky. I probably haven't said his name properly, but his Twitter is at EDU Bookcast. And I love his literature reviews. He's very good at dissecting the text and reflecting on the learning. So that that's something that I really enjoy listening to. I also listen to a podcast which is called Making Better Teachers, which is Kevin O'Shea, and his Twitter is @MadForMaple, M-A-D for Maple. He's a Canadian, so there must be the Maple link in there. As a PYP teacher, I follow the hashtag PYP chat. And also, I've been very fortunate to attend many conferences led by like a range of educational thinkers. So Dylan William, Ron Richard, and Pam Hook, the three that I also follow. But to be honest, I couldn't list all of them because there's very, very many.
I hear you. Well, that's cool. And I personally love to follow Bonnie Singer, who does brain frames, and she's been to a lot of our Senya conferences and has presented for us there. So I would highly recommend her. And she and I will be she and I will be having a podcast shortly. But I'll list all of your suggestions in the show notes from today on our website for everybody to follow as well. Hey, you guys, I think we're out of time. We've promised that this would be a happy hour podcast with all they need to learn in less time than an hour. So we're at about 45 minutes, and I think we better call it a day. But I can't thank you enough for taking the time and giving some of us newbies some hope and some ideas for the future of this virtual learning, because I think, as you say, it's probably not going to end anytime soon, and we just need to embrace it and move on. But do you have any other words for the wise before you leave for today?
Yeah, I just want to say, like, yeah, I'm still not an expert, even though I'm at week 8. But I think the important thing to remember is that we're also learning day by day. So I think we will still see improvements, like in the systems that we have in place, even though we're already at 8 weeks now. So it's never ending. So we just keep on like exploring and seeing like what can work at this very unique and challenging time. But I would just tell everyone who's starting this journey as well to take it easy. Don't feel like you should have the perfect like approach to this at week 3 or even at the first week. You will learn eventually, and then you can just like pick what works best for you. So it's a learning for teachers as well.
And I'd most definitely echo that. It's definitely a learning process. Throughout the process, as teachers, we've been reflecting on it, and also we've been surveying the parents and making modifications based on our own teacher judgments, and also on parental feedback, because of course those are the adults who are actually in the room doing it with their students at that point in time. So just it's an ongoing process, and what we're doing now is different to what we did when we first started, and we'll continue to make modifications based on what we see as the best route to follow, I suppose. I would just say, like, it's at the end of the day, it's all about the students. So the more that we can connect with our students and support them through this process, be it academically or just informally, and like giving them that social and emotional connection, I think is very important, because at this time people might be feeling isolated, they've only got the screen to look at. So just trying to make those personal connections in any way we can, really.
I hope you enjoyed our first roundtable discussion. We're new to podcasts here at Senya and are on the lookout for great ideas. Let us know if you have an idea you'd like to share.